program. Sam Rejofsky, Sam Nation, Talk Radio 790 KBC. Happy President's Day. Hope you had a, if maybe you didn't work today, maybe you attended the anti-Trump protest downtown. Sounded like quite the place to be. Or, you know, maybe you worked and were an otherwise productive member of society. At any rate, just because it is a holiday for some people doesn't mean that it was a no-news day. And one of the big things that's developing right now, I want to get right to it, is this brouhaha developing about Milo Yiannopoulos. Now, if you don't know who good old Milo is, I will fill you in. I give you a quick thumbnail sketch here. He's a young guy, okay? I want to say he's in his 30s, mid-30s. He is a very, very colorful young man. He's openly homosexual, very outspoken, very conservative. His technical title is senior tech editor at Breitbart News, but he primarily deals with, you know, political issues. I would say Milo is very famous for really being one of the principal, I think, opponents of the whole political correctness movement. And so what Milo does is he's a bit of a provocateur. I remember I've met him at the Republican convention this summer where he came. You got to imagine this, right? So Republicans, you know, what do you think of if you're going to a party, a room full of Republicans? Well, yeah, silver haired old ladies, you know, walking around with their big elephant pins, you know, and their American flag jackets. You know, you're kind of picturing sort of a 1990s Cadillac crowd. And in comes, and you got to picture this, into the room where he was given the speech, here goes Milo Yiannopoulos. And he's got an entourage of, and I can say this as a straight man, he's an attractive young men with him. By the way, all of age, and this is important because where we're going with the story. But at any rate, he comes in, he's got a whole entourage with him. He's very animated. He is very boisterous. And he gets up there, and this is a guy that immediately sucks all the air out of the room. He's somebody who got up there to the mic, and there are other speakers at the event that we went to. And he's the guy that just gets up there, and immediately it's all about him. And this is why, by the way. And you've seen him on different shows, and he's very good at getting right to the issues. And he's a big, you know, he's somebody who's very outspoken about Islam. You know, that hasn't earned him very many friends. He was an early Trump supporter, and I think is very well known for calling referring to Trump as daddy. So take that as you for whatever you want to take it for. All right. So what happened? The brouhaha, and by the way, this threatens his job even at Breitbart News. As we speak, and I'll follow it here this hour and see if there's any late-breaking developments, but apparently Breitbart News is actually considering whether or not to keep Milo on. And the reason is that some audio surfaced of him giving an interview, talking about man-boy love, all right? Now, this is a family program, so I'm going to G-rate this as much as I possibly can. But the theme of it was, you know, the idea of consent. And consent right now is a big topic because we're talking about, you know, we're talking about college campuses, you know, we're talking about date rape. We're trying to address issues of not student-teacher, but professor, student, you know, these are big issues that we're grappling with. And so the conversation somehow was dealing with consent. And Milo's greater point that he was making in the interview was that consent has been, you know, has really been manipulated by a lot of the people on the left to try to make it more complicated than it really is. And that was the thrust of his point. So in the piece, and this is so the way it's being characterized, if you, for example, were watching some of the news in the mainstream media, you know, if we were, you know, the CNN news feed, if you're following that. You would think that Milo got up and advocated sex between 13-year-old boys and grown men. And I always try to, I try to dedicate this program to stripping away some of these nutty layers of this, the game of telephone, and getting you right back to the primary source. So here, I'm going to go through what actually happened, and then I'll tell you what I think of it. Some unnamed guy in the interview says it wasn't Milo. Somebody else brings up the 13-year-old thing. He says, this other unnamed person says, and this is a quote, "The whole consent thing for me, it's not this black and white thing that people try to paint it. Are there some 13-year-olds out there capable of giving informed consent? Probably, is what the guy says. So some other guy brings it up. Okay? And Milo, it's prompting Milo to give a response. And it's about the age of consent. And let's play the first clip, Robbie. This is what Milo's response is to this guy bringing this issue up of consent, age of consent, and what the appropriate age of consent is, because, of course, in the U.S., it's 18. This was what his response is.
The law is probably about right. It's probably roughly the right age. I think it's probably about okay. But there are certainly people who are capable of giving consent at a younger age. I certainly consider myself to be one of them. People who are sexually active younger. I think it particularly happens in the gay world, by the way.
All right. I can't speak to this. He has a unique experience that I don't understand. That's not the point. What I'm trying to show you is he is responding to somebody else bringing the issue up. All right. And then what happens? The conversation goes back and forth. And then Milo gets into a little bit about, the definition of pedophilia, that it's, something not necessarily teenagers, but younger kids, whatever, not important. But here's supposedly the offensive part of the conversation where, again, this other person asks, you are advocating then for cross-generational relationships, okay? Which, by the way, I think, isn't that most of Hollywood? I thought, cross-generational relationships was very L.A. But anyway, you're advocating for cross-generational relationships here. Can we be honest about that? And here's what Milo says.
Yeah, I don't mind admitting that. And I think particularly in the gay world and outside the Catholic Church, if that's where some of you want to go with this, I think in the gay world, some of the most important, enriching and incredibly, life-affirming, important, shaping relationships very often between younger boys and older men, can be hugely positive experiences.
Okay, and that's it. And that is where everybody lost their minds. Now, you know me. If you listen to the program, you know that one of the things that I'm really sensitive about is sensitivity. I think, for most part, that outrage is overplayed and misdirected. Now, and it's selective. That's the critical thing. Ask yourself first, who is taking this and taking Milo Yiannopoulos to the woodshed? Well, first of all, it's the conservatives. He got disinvited from CPAC, which is the conservative conference where he was supposed to have been one of the main speakers. And that is interesting because, of course, I'm telling you, CPAC, and we're talking about the Milo thing. So Milo's got this scandal out right now, and I just played the clip so you could hear exactly what it was that he said. But the CPAC conference, so he gets disinvited there. And then, of course, you've got Politico piling on CNN, Fox News, all the, right and left wing, publications, because they're keen. Now, they sense this weakness. They sense this opportunity to get Milo. And it brought something up. It triggered a memory of mine, which is when I was, when I was 18, okay. And it says, but not what you think. When I was 18, I went to UCI. I was a student there for a few years, and my first real paycheck job, I worked at the UCI library. And at the library was a very, even back then, this was 1998, very powerful librarian there. And his name was Daniel Tseng. And this is all, by the way, documented in his writings, and I'll share some of it with you here. Daniel Tsang was somewhat of an advocator for man-boy love relationships, and openly so. He attended the NAMBLA conference. He chronicled it for a gay magazine. He wrote about it in The Advocate. He even wrote a book. He wrote an intro to a book. And I'll share just for comparison. I'll share for comparison why this is. So here's something that he wrote. So, you know, it's talking about the world, the gay rights movement, you know, hitherto ignored gay liberationists, da 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 da. And now the issues, the new issues of the gay rights movement include racism within the movement. That's one. The rights of gay youth. That's two. And then here's his third and it's in an important place, important part of his thesis. And the question of sex between adults and young people. And he goes on to write a very direct argument for this thing. And this is all the way back. I mean, this is 20 years ago. And everybody knew it at UCI. No one cared. No one made a big deal about it. Well, in fact, I would tell you, if anything, I mean, his career flourished and prospered. He regularly got raises. Ended up, he was just barely, you know, he just barely retired last year. And he wrote for the OC Weekly. This is the interesting thing for me. Why can somebody who is actually paid with your tax dollars and my tax dollars sit there and advocate for, you know, consensual relationships between men and boys? And then you have Milo Yiannopoulos step in it awkwardly, kind of making a point that maybe he shouldn't have waded into, but certainly not advocating it as explicitly or as directly as Daniel Tsang and others have done. I mean, this is to me, this encapsulates something about what the left and even on the right, this selective outrage. Remember Meryl Streep? I mean, it's so exactly like Meryl Streep would probably be all over this. And yet, who was she applauding for when Roman Polanski was named, was put up in the Oscars? And she stood up and she's clapping for him and clapping for him. And there's you want to talk about consent. I mean, there's somebody who actually raped somebody and was convicted of it. So here's, you know, you it's an interesting thing. So why, you know, where, how, and why? I mean, you've got to be aware. Why are we getting so outraged? And I'll tell you, it's very similar to the outrage over Trump, by the way, because you know this. Like, let's say maybe you're not even the biggest Trump supporter. In fact, maybe you didn't even vote for him, but you can certainly be. You can appreciate the level of antipathy and protest and outrage over him, his presidency, his how vulgar, how horrible, everything. And I think it comes down to there are certain change agents in society that people want to there are certain change agents people want to destroy. And Milo's one of them that even I can even speak for the conservative movement. I think there are many conservatives who see his style as dangerous because many conservatives want the adoration of the media. They want mainstream recognition. They care more about blending into the cocktail parties that they go to in Washington, D.C. And they care less about the purity and the sharpness and I think honestly any kind of preciseness of their ideology. And so you've got a young guy that comes around and he looks, it's crazy. I mean, you watch him at the, like I said, you watch him walk into a room and it looks like a circus and he walks in. But what he says, you know, he's a phenomenally articulate guy and he's one of the great, you know, he's will be regardless of what happens here with this drama, one of the great conservative thinkers of our time. But you have old guard people on the left and on the right who don't like change. And for them, just the way as Trump is, a vulgarian that, you know, rode, rode in on a golden chariot, and is conquering the precious lands of Washington, and draining the swamp, which includes many Republicans, not just Democrats. So too, I think you've got on the media front, you've got people that are looking for any opportunity to be outraged and to push Milo off the stage. And the best example of that is that what was the first thing that we read today? That staff at Breitbart News are threatening to walk out if he doesn't get the boot. See? All right, I'm going to tell you how this fits in with my trip to Mexico. Great stories for you right up next. Sam Rzhovsky, Sam Nation, Talk Radio 790 KBC.
Talk Radio 790
KABC.
Fire in the Disco, exactly. Perfect song to talk about Milo in Annapolis. He's got a little fire in his disco, that's for sure. He's got under fire for his comments, which supposedly he's advocating, relationships between older men and younger boys. Not what it is, and I went over that last segment. But here, actually, tying it all together is a great piece that it's not about Milo at all. But it illustrates the point I was just making at the end of the last segment. Glenn Reynolds, who's the Instapundit guy, he writes in USA Today, "Trump and the crisis of the meritocracy." Now, in this piece, he talks about how, when you consider Trump's policies, the things that he's doing, they're actually very popular. They're more popular than he is. And they're not particularly revolutionary. It goes through the examples. And I'll actually give these as also examples of selective outrage. For example, Obama deported way more people than George W. Bush did. Dropped more bombs. Waged more war. But the selective outrage, of course, being that Bush was a warmonger and Obama had the Peace Prize. Now, so the idea in the piece is that, look, you've got a president whose policies are popular, but he himself is ostensibly not. And it cites an economist, his name's Tyler Cohen. "Occasionally, the real force behind a political ideology is the subconsciously held desire that a certain group of people should not be allowed to rise in relative status." In other words, and this is a great quote, because we have a certain preconceived idea as a country who ought to be in positions of power. And usually those positions of power revolve between, libs are always into recycling, right? Private sector, public sector, public sector, private sector, and you have people going from politics to white shoe law firms to banks and back into the public sector. And there is this elite, and regardless of how the election turns, and this is how it's been for years, regardless of how the election turns, it's a certain defined class of individuals, people that, deserve, in air quotes here, deserve to be in positions of power, who are meant to be in those positions. And if you can tell by the way I'm saying it, the inference is, and talk to anybody, west of the 405, and they'll tell you this, Trump is not one of these people. He's a rube, right? He's a vulgarian. He's dumb. He's mentally unstable. You've heard these recent pronouncements of Trump perhaps being unfit for office because he's losing his mind. So the idea is there are certain people who just should never be president, who should never be in the Senate, who should never. And it actually applies to Milo, too. There are people in my line of work, in what I do, who I talk to, and who just are outraged. And these are conservatives, supposedly. Outraged that a guy, that this flip, and honestly, a little flamboyant, extravagant, outspoken, rude, insolent, you know, whippersnapper comes along and suddenly takes over the conservative pundit world by storm. And it's the same opposition to Trump. And you run into it everywhere. And so that is, by the way, when I say selective outrage, it's outrage not based on the issue, not based on the substance of the idea or of the policy, but rather on who's bearing it. And you know I'm right because, gosh, I mean, from immigration, just that example, when you take what Obama, I mean, Trump has not done anything that Obama hasn't done. And yet you think that the world was coming to an end and that we were the single most racist country being led by a raving lunatic because it's a policy that now is being promulgated by someone who doesn't deserve to be there. All right. We have Dave Alpert with the news next. And when we come back, I wore a Trump hat in Mexico. I've got to tell you about this. Great experiment. Back after this. Sam Rogoski, Sam Nation, Talk Radio 790.
Talk Radio 790.
KABC.
And welcome back, Sam Rogoski, Sam Nation, Talk Radio 790 KABC. All right, as promised, I'll give you a brief trip report here from I was in Cabo San Lucas this weekend in Mexico. Never had been there before, actually. Very beautiful. I was there with some friends for a wedding of a mutual friend of ours. Now, you know, I'm a bit of a provocateur myself, so I couldn't resist. And one day, the day of the wedding, I thought it would be a fun thing for me to wear a Make America Great Again hat, a red one. This is the classic one that I got right at the beginning of the whole Trump campaign. And so I took my trusty Make America Great Again hat and I put it on. And I wore it in Mexico. Now, I am with – he's letting me talk about him. So I was with a good friend of mine who's Omar Santana, who you may know from Top Chef. He was came in last season, I think, all the way to the finale. And then so came in second, really great chef here in Orange County. But it so happens he's an immigrant from the Dominican Republic. He's a good guy to have around because, you know, he cooks well and you know, can help you get around Mexico because the Spanish is very good. So there we are. And I'm standing with him and we're talking. And I had this absolutely deranged woman come up to me. She works for Vice Media, you know those people? So she's an L.A., you know, L.A. type. And comes up to me, points at the hat, and goes, says, "Why are you wearing that?" And I said, "Well, because I want to make America great again. You know, I mean, that's why I have the hat." And she says, "Well, that," she tells me, right, she goes, she just stops, her face drops, she goes, "That's the most offensive thing you could do." Now think about that. Really? I mean, is that really the most, I mean, objectively, is that the most offensive thing that I could do? So I said, "Well, what?" So I'm curious, tell me, why is it offensive? And she goes, "Okay, look at these." And she starts pointing at the, you know, at the Mexican people working at the restaurant. She goes, "Look at these people. These people are serving you food, and how do you think you're making them feel?" Well, let me tell you, it was like that was a softball of softballs. I looked at her dead in the eyes and I said, "Do you understand how patently racist you are to assume that everybody here has the same opinion, is of like mind, just because of their nationality and their color of their skin. And this is it. She wants to speak for everybody. She wants to be offended on other people's behalf. This is classic liberalism. And Amar, this is why I brought him up, because Amar doesn't skip a beat, you know. And he's just this really friendly guy. So he grabs one of the guys that's serving us there. Turned out it was the owner of the restaurant. And he says to him, hey, in Spanish, I understand Spanish, I don't speak it. So he says, hey, you know, what do you think of my friend's hat? What do you think of that? And here was the guy's answer was classic. He goes, oh, I love it. I want Trump to make America great again, so all you Americans have lots of money and can come down here to Cabo and spend it in my restaurant. and that's it. End of conversation. The only people that were offended were people that were offended on other people's behalf. I'll maybe share one or two more stories. But like, for example, somebody said to me at one point, you know, there are Iranians here. Do you know how that makes them feel? And about 2 minutes later, the bride's Iranian uncle grabbed the hat, put it on his head, and was like, told me, you know, I voted for Trump. I want you to know that. And walked away. You just never know. You just don't know. All right, back after this. Sam Rogowski, Sam Nation, Talk Radio, 790 KBC.
Talk Radio, 790
KABC.
All right, Sam Rogowski here. The rain has finally died down, but the damage is still there. You got this sinkhole in Studio City. Incredible. It swallowed two cars. Some poor lady got trapped in her car for a while. And apparently it's going to take several days to repair. Well, no crap. I mean, look at this. It's a crater. Looks like the dinosaurs. It's like an extinction event, this thing. So, listen, the roads are terrible right now. Potholes everywhere. Have you noticed this, how bad they are? I read somewhere it's going to take hundreds of millions of dollars to just fix the roadways here in Orange County alone, and LA County probably even more than that because, well, let's be honest, the roads weren't very good to begin with. So be safe out there. People are doing crazy stuff. They're slipping and sliding. You need more time to stop a car when there's loose gravel, you know, bits and pieces of asphalt breaking off. So be careful. Keep plenty of distance between you and the car in front of you. And if, I'm praying that it's not going to happen, but if by chance some idiot does rear-end you, you know what you need to do. You don't talk to their insurance company. You don't talk to them. Don't try to do it on your own. Hire a lawyer. And the lawyer we trust here on the program is none other than James Bergner. We call him Sweet James. It's because he's a good guy. He's going to take care of you and make sure that your rights are protected. Give him a call, 1-800-881-2021, 1-800-881-2021, or visit his website, sweetjames.com. All righty. I was telling you a minute ago here about how I went down to Mexico and wore a Trump hat to a wedding. And it was also an interesting sociological experiment, of course, because I had that one gal attack me and start telling me how offensive I was. And then the best part about it is she left the conversation. And she was so mad. So then she leaves the conversation and the ceremony was beautiful and everything. I took my hat off for that. And then went to dinner and there was a table assignments. You know how it is. And I sat at table 14. I'll never forget this. I walk up to the table, and there are two couples and then this woman sitting right there. And there's maybe five open spots, and I'm with two other guys. So there's more than enough open spots. So what do you think I did? That's right. I sat right down next to her. And I said, hi, how are you? And she stood up and left the wedding. This is insanity, people. if I don't care if you think that Trump is literally the worst person on the planet, and that would be an absurd, logical leap. But really, you just walk out. Remember when you were in grade school, and my teacher, I'd get offended because somebody would say something, like cry or something, and my teacher would tell me that rhyme. What's that rhyme? Sticks and stones can break my bones, but words can never hurt me. Well, shoot. It's a freaking hat. So then I guess she ended up coming back to the party and was reseated at another table where she complained the entire night. And even fellow, Trump haters were sick of her by the night's end. And she threatened, she told people, she went around the party telling people, it was kind of high up on a cliff. It's beautiful, overlooking the water is where the venue was. And she was telling people that she wanted to throw me over the edge into the ocean. And I had a number of people tell me she was pretty large, so she might have been successful, given the chance. Okay. It was crazy. It really was. People went banana. But the surprising thing about it, too, is the number of people that came up and in a whisper came up to me and would say, I love your hat. I love your hat. I voted for him. And this is the thing. It's like this, the shrill, 5% out there, they're going bananas, are silencing so many good people. And this is not who we are as a country. It really isn't. All right, back after this. Sam Rogowski, Sam Nation, Talk Radio, 790 KABC.
Talk Radio, 790
KABC.
Sam Rogowski here. Yeah, so tying all this in together, this whole idea of selective outrage, a couple of other great examples of this, and everybody is up in arms about Trump and Russia, but don't you remember when Hillary Clinton went over there with her plastic reset button and tried to make nice with Putin? She gave him one of those, Staples easy buttons, but it had reset on it. And Trump mercilessly trolls her for it, makes fun of her. But the greater point being, of course, that she went to Russia and in her own stupid and inept way tried to improve the relationship between our two countries. No. But when she did that, everybody said, oh, it's great. It's wonderful. It's the best thing. Wow. Madam Secretary, what a great diplomat you are. And then do you remember when Obama leaned in to then-President Medvedev, who was Putin's little placeholder there while, he took an absence from the Kremlin, right? So he leans into Medvedev, and it was captured on a hot mic. Obama says to him, now look, right now, I got this election, but after the election, I can be a little more flexible. And so where were all of you liberals protesting that, huh? If you're so worried, how come you're so worried now about Russia? See, it has nothing to do with the substance of the argument. It's all about the fact. Just be honest. You don't like Trump. And this is what happened. One gal I was talking to at the wedding as I'm wearing the hat, she goes, it's just every argument ended in a dead end. And I finally said to her, I said, you know what? You aren't giving me logical arguments or giving me emotional arguments. Can you agree on that? Can you agree to that? She said, yes. And there it is. At the end of the day, it's purely an emotional argument. And it has little to nothing to do with substance of it. And this, by the way, I always come back to this as a great example of it. The Book of Mormon musical? Book of Mormon musical. If you haven't seen it, go. I love it, okay? And I say it as a Mormon. Like, I love it. It's hilarious. But let me tell you why it got rave reviews. It got rave reviews because ostensibly the show makes fun of Mormons. If it was a Muhammad musical, first of all, they'd get firebombed. And second of all, every liberal commentator would be crapping bricks. It's the truth. And incidentally, if you go and watch the Book of Mormon musical, they make fun of Africa in a way that no liberal should tolerate. I mean, every stereotype about Africa gets dragged out. And you know what? They get a pass. And why? Because at least at face value, they're making fun of Mormons. And Mormons are white and rich and powerful. And so they're okay. They're fair game. All right. We'll be back. See you next time. Have a great day. Sam Rogowski, Sam Nation, Talk Radio 790 KBC.
Talk Radio 790
KABC.